Hello everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of Coffee with Innovate Finance, a series of bite-sized interviews with leading experts from across industry. In these episodes, we explore a range of topics focused on developments across financial services and fintech innovations. I'm Ayanna Vidal, Head of Policy and Government Affairs at Innovate Finance, and I'm delighted to introduce my guest for today, Dan Morgan, Policy Lead for Europe at Plaid. Dan is no stranger to Innovate Finance, previously heading up the policy team here before subsequent stints at the Department for International Trade, Ripple, and now Plaid. Plaid is a hypergrowth fintech company with operations in several locations across the world, including the United States, where it was launched, Canada, France, Spain, Ireland, the Netherlands, and of course, the UK. Plaid builds technical infrastructure APIs that connect consumers, financial institutions, and developers, all while generating unique data insights. As testament to this growth, Visa announced the acquisition of Plaid for $5.3 billion at the start of 2020. Delighted that Dan has found the time to join us today to discuss the next steps for Plaid and the future of open banking. Dan, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me. Delighted to be here.
So Dan, could you start by telling us a bit more about how and why Plaid was set up and your role at the company?
Sure. So obviously I've been here since the start of 2020. So I'll go back to some of the comments from our founder, Zach, who's talked about this a few times, I think, in different speaking events. So I think Plaid's founders were originally focused on a more consumer-facing fintech proposition. But the original market feedback, you know, how that played out was that the bank integration layer was the real added value, connecting banks to fintech developers and connecting them to the ACH payment rail, which powered apps like Venmo in the States. And it really grew from there. That was back in 2012, I believe. And to as you noticed, to where we are today in the States and Canada and growing it in Europe. So I think I describe Plaid as building the infrastructure that powers modern digital financial services, including the technical API infrastructure, basically connecting consumers, financial institutions, and fintech developers. So we're that middle layer, if you will, and in a European context, we're sort of powering open banking with PSD2 compliant solutions. Bit about my role. Well, I'm the European policy lead, which essentially is managing relationships with governments around Europe, regulators, policymakers, as part of our pan-European go-to-market efforts. So as you know, as head of policy, what that type of role involves. And so, yeah, I've been here since the start of the year, and we've been super busy growing in the UK and across Europe. Obviously, from a working from home perspective, a little bit more than we would have imagined, but it's been exciting so far.
Thank you. And with your role encompassing European policy activities as well as the UK, you must be so close to the ground in terms of the impact that Brexit will or could have on any subsequent regulatory divergence, you know, when it comes to open banking, PSD2, and the future of open data. Could you tell us a bit more about the major challenges or opportunities that you're seeing and where you think the UK should act to further establish itself as the flagship market?
Yeah, great question. I mean, of course, I think the challenges have been well documented for the fintech sector. And, you know, back in when I was at Innovate Finance, we talked a lot about the impact that may have, and I continue, you know, you've continued to do that. The loss of passporting will be a big blow. And we're starting to see that feed through now to TPPs in the market with the confirmation from the latest EBA statement that their eIDAS certificates will not be, you know, valid in Europe, which is going to be a particularly hard stop for servicing some European consumers. So the reality is now feeding through. So the impact is going to be, as it always has been, tough for many people in the fintech sector. But despite that, the UK is the largest fintech market. It's the largest open banking market, and is one of the most healthy innovative financial services market in the world. So one of the reasons why Plaid is located here in Europe as our main base today, and we're looking to continue to grow here. So I think although there are challenges, there is a huge opportunity for the UK to embrace some of the changes and look to diverge smartly in a way which encourages the sector to continue to grow and encourage, you know, international fintech companies to domicile and grow here in the UK. You know, open, if we, you know, bring it back down to the local and the impact on Plaid, I think there's lots of areas that, you know, the UK could potentially look at things differently. But from a very, you know, local perspective, I think open banking has been done better in the UK than it has in parts of Europe. I, you know, the way they've approached that has been better. The API access has been better. The uptake has been good. And the FCA and the CMA and the OBIE have been really positive in how they've created this market here. But there are challenges across Europe and including the UK. And many of them challenges, I think, derive down from obviously European law, given the fact that PSD2 governs much of the market. So I think there's an opportunity to look at this and think, how do we diverge smartly in things like definition of account information services, where today, you know, this could potentially be a number of players within the chain. You know, can we look at, you know, just the retrieval of data being the regulated entity to encourage more innovation further on within the sort of data chain in open banking? Other areas, I think, you know, potentially that could be looked at is 90-day reauthentication requirements in open banking. I think this is well documented of some of the challenges and friction that this will bring on to the market, where, you know, TPPs, fintech providers will be cut off from their main connection at banks, you know, potentially losing customers with a high amount of attrition. And that's often owned or is owned by the bank. I think there's changes that could be made here, tweaks that could be made here to put that, you know, back in the control of the TPP and the consumer who owns that. And there's ways of making it more dynamic and ways of potentially making it, you know, creating less friction in the market. And I think there's near universality in terms of understanding that this is a problem. And if we have some freedom to look at how we do things differently, and I know there's a payments landscape review that the Treasury is looking at, there's the fintech review, the budget is coming up, you know, there's lots of things in the offering where potentially there's the open finance consultation where this could potentially be looked at, and I think there's a huge opportunity to support the sector. Beyond that, I think, you know, although I said that API access to APIs has been much better in the UK than in Europe, I think, you know, giving more teeth to the regulator to ensure that connections and API connections are maintained when there are problems, that we can potentially have some means of redress, looking to beef up that type of powers. And I think that was one of the recommendations in the recent smart data report, which came out from Bayes recently. So I think things like that, it could be a potential way to look at it. And also, you know, PIS and payments, again, is something that we're looking at, but the take up has been slow because of lack of functionalities. There's a set route map in from the CMA. You know, we'd encourage that to be implemented sooner rather than later and look to really focus on how can we develop bank-to-bank payments and PIS to support a much more innovative payments market. I mean, that's, you know, just top of my head type thing, but there is an opportunity, I think, to diverge in a way which is going to support the fintech sector.
Just a short shopping list there, but as you say, lots of opportunity once we finish the Brexit transition period. So you talked a bit about customer friction and how we could look at addressing that. Do you still think we have some way to go in terms of mass consumer adoption of open banking? And are there any lessons that could be learned from our experiences of open banking as we move towards open finance or possibly open data?
Yeah, so I think we're not at mass adoption yet. There are some very interesting use cases starting to develop, you know, innovative uses of open banking and PSD2. You know, and Plaid is powering some of them. Money in Excel is a great example where, you know, financial applications looking to bleed out from potentially where you would, you know, see them in financial services to where you are as a consumer, whether that's in your phone or Excel, etc. And I think there's lots of potential other examples at the moment, which are doing really well. I mean, you've seen some of the responses to COVID and things like that. So I think, you know, it's not to dismiss what's happening in the market, but I think one of the challenges is that the lack of available data within the regulated space to merely payment accounts has limited what we can do, what the market can do. And what we do know is that money is fungible and financial choices are interdependent. And if we bring in more financial data sets, more insights, more competitive solutions, more, options will be available for consumers to manage their finances and have a real need to sort of, opt into open banking and open finance, because there'll be more, functionality available. So I think one of the biggest challenges to mass adoption has been, am I going to necessarily, go all in for a PFM? I think there's much more we can do with different financial applications with more data. So I think one of the things that will encourage wider adoption is moving towards open finance.
And picking up on this, do you see the model or the model that would work being an enforced regulatory standard as the most effective way of getting the industry aligned? Or do you think there's some other form of minimum right access or other approach that would be preferable to move this forward?
I think we've discussed this a little bit and in a number of places. I don't think we can go the same route as we have with open banking. It was a very prescriptive way of going about it. And although it's been reasonably successful, open finance is a huge concept, bringing in lots and lots of areas, financial services. So I think to go down a very standardized route here would take a very long time and perhaps would be unsuccessful. We've seen how difficult it's been in open banking. So I think there's a few areas that we'd approach to try and bring it in. And one would be to implement a customer data right for all your financial data. Very similar to how it's been explored in Australia with the consumer data right. We would look to guarantee the access to all their financial data as a right. And we can work down from there in how we potentially achieve it. In terms of regulatory clarity, I think, each country will have their own specifics across the world, but things like access, liability and governance are going to be really key in how we approach that. I think we also need to think about where regulatory interventions are most needed. How do we unlock this? Open finance is a huge concept across areas as diverse as insurance, banking, long-term investments, pensions. So I think like an audit across the regulatory landscape as to where interventions are most needed to unlock this. And it could be anything from where we have paper-based ID requirements or where the data is not digitized or a whole host of areas, not just regulatory, where we may need to intervene to open up potentially the market. As I've already said, I think liability frameworks are absolutely key, and to look at redress around data. And I know we're starting to look at this now. How do we identify and quantify loss, and how do we look to protect certain actors within the market? I think that is key. But I think the big one for us, where we might be slightly different from others, is I think let the market build open finance infrastructure. Whether it's technical service providers, whether it's aggregators like ourselves, whether it's other TPPs, they have the expertise to connect the market to a whole host of different players, whether that's not just banks, it could be insurers, it could be pension providers. And without an industry standard API, I think that is something that, we could help drive the market and open up and provide that data to different actors within that, whether it's other fintech players or direct to consumers. So I think that's a key one. And I think the FCA is in a similar line around that. I remember being at a conference back in, listening to a virtual conference in May. I think it was Alex Roy was talking about the market delivering open finance. And so I think, there's an understanding that this is a huge area, and being so prescriptive is going to be tricky. And we'd agree that, the market has a role in creating that.
So moving on now, and you touched on it earlier, obviously the coronavirus pandemic has had a huge impact on financial services and fintech is included in that. What has the impact been on Plaid, and has it caused any major shift in the way that you operate?
Not really, not a major shift. Obviously, we're all working from home, and we've moved to a distributed organization very quickly, and I think it's been hugely successful from my perspective, looking across the organization. I've only been here since January, so most of my time at Plaid has been remote. So I think that's been the biggest change that you know we can impact. But we continue to deliver for customers, continue to grow in Europe, which I think is really important. So not a huge shift in our path to growth, but a little bit of different way culturally in how we're distributed and how we operate in terms of the working from home. But the mission remains the same, I continue to see growth. So just we're all working from home, and I personally hope that we can start to get out there and meet people at conferences and meet regulators again soon. Other than that, I think the growth path has been more or less uninterrupted.
And a common question that we've been asking all our guests is whether we should expect a new wave of innovation post-crisis as we did in 2008. So what are your thoughts on this?
As you know, I've been operating in the fintech space for a few years now, and we've continued to see it evolve. I'm very bullish on the sector, always have been since I've been in, and I continue to see that innovation continue. The 2008 was obviously key, and 2007 was the launch of the iPhone, and everything. You've seen all the presentations about the growth of that. I think you can only look at it as continuing in terms of we're going to be more remote. Digital is going to be more important. We've seen a shift to online shopping has exploded, and digital payments has exploded throughout this period. So I think despite maybe some short term economic challenges, it may be across different countries as the impact of the coronavirus feeds through into consumers and individuals and businesses. Beyond that, I think how we look at financial services will increasingly digitize, and I don't see any reason for that to slow now. I can't see a return back to a place where it's more analog. Who does that innovation will always change. Maybe it will be smaller startups. Maybe it will be larger players. Maybe it will be banks. I'm continuing to have fintech, developers, but I think that innovation will continue to grow. UK is a very positive place still. I think there's a lot of innovation still happening here. But as we look around the world as well, we see some amazing stuff in financial services around the world. So I'm pretty bullish. Obviously, I can't predict the future. If I could, then who knows?
Thank you. And to close, any other final thoughts that you want to share or raise with our listeners today?
Yeah, I think you guys at Innovate Finance are doing a great job and a really important role in navigating that relationship with the UK government. I just call on policymakers to remain focused on fintech. There's a lot going on at the moment. There's a lot of challenges. And perhaps it's not as easy to think of just about a small sector, which it still is in comparison to other huge sectors out there. But it's the importance of it is shouldn't be underestimated. We've got a fintech review coming. Let's look about where we can have tangible improvements for the skills and investments as well as our regulatory approaches. So I think to continue to keep the pressure on, ensure our importance as a sector. And demonstrate that global fintech companies continue to come here, and what can we do to ensure that continues in the future, I think would be my final comment.
Thank you, Dan, and we're very much looking forward to working with you and the rest of the Plaid team to get those exact messages across through the fintech review. So thank you so much for speaking to me today, and once again thank you to our listeners for tuning in to Coffee with Innovate Finance. Do look out for our upcoming episodes and follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more on our events and programs. As always, until next time, take care and goodbye.